I was asked to discuss this morning the sugya of grama on Shabbos and the status of the kosher sitch. And the sugya of grama on Shabbos is a very expansive sugya, but what we'll try and do is tiptoe around to kind of get the lay of the land and discuss the points that are directly relevant to the issue that we're dealing with and try and not get bogged down in some of the more thorny issues of grama on Shabbos. The kosher switch technology is not something that is new. It is rather an enhancement to the technology that was developed by Rabbi Halperin from the Institute of Halacha and Science in Yerushalayim about 35, 40 years ago. And what we'll have to do is to evaluate whether or not the enhancements that were made to the technology of Rabbi Halperin should change what the reaction of the poskim would be to this kind of mechanism. So the sugya of grama on Shabbos begins with the Gemara on Shabbos and Daf Kuf Chof Mabez, where the Gemara discusses a fire that is spreading, and a person who wants to prevent spread of the fire in order to prevent financial loss. It doesn't discuss the case, of course, where someone's life is at danger. Of course, that would be Pikuach Nefesh on Shabbos, and one would be allowed to put out the fire under all circumstances. But the Gemara is discussing a person who wants to prevent the travel of the fire in order to prevent financial loss. So the Gemara, the Mishnah says, Oysa Mechitza B'chol HaKelim. A person is allowed to make a wall of barrels, wooden barrels that are filled with water, in order so that when the fire reaches the barrels, it will burn through the barrels and release the water, and the water will then put out the fire. Why is one allowed to do this malacha, which is ostensibly the malacha of kibbuy, extinguishing a fire on Shabbos? So Gemara quotes from the pasuk in Parashas Yisroi, Laisase kol malacha, you are not allowed to perform any malacha. Asiyo hudaasa, performing a malacha actively is prohibited. Grama shari, but if you just cause the malacha to occur indirectly, but you yourself do not perform it, so then grama is you cause it to happen. That is permitted. So here we have the basis for the idea that grama, not performing the malacha directly, but just causing it to occur, is mutter. That is what the Gemara tells us in Masechta Shabbos. The Mordechai Masechta Shabbos Simin Shin Sadi Tes quotes from the Rishonim that this is only mutter on Shabbos with Makom Hefsid. So a mutter in order to prevent the financial loss, but not gratuitously. A person cannot do malachas in a fashion of grama, even though he's just causing it to occur, not doing it directly. That is prohibited. It's only mutter if it's b'makayim hefsid. And the Mordechai is quoted by the Ramah in Simeshin Lamedal Sivchav Beis. It's quoted by the Ramah the Maisa with regards to this case. The Shulchan Aruch says gram kiboy is mutter in order to prevent the expansion of the fire. To prevent financial, and the Ramah adds, b'makom seda, that's only mutter in order to prevent financial loss. And the Mefarshim explained that that's true with regards to all grama on Shabbos. The Ramah's opinion is that it's only mutter in order to prevent financial loss, based on the opinion of the Mordechai, and that's echoed by the Or Zeruah, by the Chiddushei Haran, and many other Rishonim as well. It is somewhat debatable whether or not the Shulchan Aruch subscribes to this position too. It could be that the Ramah is just explaining what the Shulchan Aruch held, but the Shulchan Aruch would also be of the opinion that grama on Shabbos is only permitted in B'makom Seda, but not absent that qualification, he would not allow Gram Kiboy. Or perhaps the opinion of the Shulchan Aruch should be taken at face value, that he says Gram Kiboy is mutter, and perhaps it's mutter under all circumstances. The Beis Yosef does quote the Rishonim who say it's only mutter b'makom hefsid, so that might give us some indication that the Shulchan Aruch does subscribe to that position. But it's in fact a machlokes hapoiskim. What is the opinion of the Shulchan Aruch with regards to this matter? Rabbi Avadia, in a few places, in explaining the position of the Sfaradim, of those who follow strictly the opinion of the Shulchan Aruch, says that l'chatchila one should not be makel on gram kiboy on Shabbos, but in extenuating circumstances perhaps it would be allowed, but in extenuating circumstances if it's b'makom seda, then even the Ramah would allow it. So those who are machmer, even the opinion of the Shulchan Aruch, that it is only mutter b'makom seda. The Mordechai does have two opinions in Rishonim whether or not this is true on Yom Tif as well. Whether or not this halacha that grama is only mutter b'makom hefsid is true on Yom Tov too. It could be on Yom Tov we're more lenient and grama entirely would be allowed. The Ramah gives an indication like that in Hilchos Yom Tov that all grama is permitted, but the Magen Avraham disagrees, and the Magen Avraham's opinion is that even on Yom Tov grama is only mutter b'makom hefsid. Some, though, do paskin, like the Ramah seems to indicate, that grama on Yom Tov would be allowed, and that was the basis for the controversy surrounding the Star K ovens. If you remember a few years ago, the Rabbi Heinemann's position was that one was allowed to press a button on the pad of the oven because nothing changed on the screen when you pressed the button. It just caused the temperature to change with a time delay. So it was kind of a grumma. You caused it, the temperature to change, but you didn't do it directly. And when you pressed the button on the keypad, nothing was visible. So you didn't have a problem with pressing the electrical button on Yom Tov because it didn't cause any change at that moment. You pressed the button and nothing happened. And the fact that later on changed the temperature of the oven was only grumma. And grumma, Rabbi Heinemann felt, grumma would be permitted on Yom Tov, and therefore he developed this technology to change the temperature in the ovens on Yom Tov. Rav HaPaiskim at that time disagreed with Rabbi Heinemann because they were opposed to, some were opposed to grumma on Yom Tov entirely, okay? But the major opposition was that they were opposed to pressing electrical buttons under any circumstances on Yom Tov, even though the change didn't occur immediately, but the fact that you pressed the button, even though you don't see anything on the screen, and that triggered something later on, they were opposed to using that electricity even in that circumstance. That was the major opposition of the Poskim. But again, Rabbi Heinemann's suggestion was based upon this idea that perhaps grumma on Yom Tov, we are more lenient, and would be mutter, even if it's not b'makom seda. There are other advantages to the Star K ovens other than just that that technology. This is, of course, beyond the scope of our discussion. Okay, so grumma on Shabbos is mutter, as the Gemara tells us, but the Rama adds, in the name of the many Rishonim, that that's only true b'makom seda, in order to prevent a financial loss. But it would not be a malacha d'oraisa to do a to cause a malacha to happen, only if you do it directly. That's the Gemara on Shabbos. However, the major crux of the sugya of grumma on Shabbos hinges upon a contradiction between this Gemara on Shabbos and a Gemara in Masechtas Bava Kamma. The Gemara tells us in Masechtas Bava Kamma and of Samach that Zaira veruach misayasa, if I do Zaira, Zaira is the malacha in the Seder Hapas, the Lamates of its malachas that comes after Dosh, after you thresh the kernel of grain from the husk, you detach it, you extract it. So they would separate between the husk and the kernel of grain by throwing it up into the wind. Winnowing. After threshing, they would do winnowing. They would throw it up in the wind. The lighter husk, the lighter casing of the kernel of grain would blow away in the wind, and the heavier kernel of grain would fall to the ground. And that was followed by the malacha of merakin and boirer, where you would pick out the kernels of grain from the surrounding dirt, from the stones that it fell to the ground on. So that was the malach of Zaira, is they would throw up the kernel of grain together with its shell into the wind, and the wind would separate between the kernel of grain and the husk and the shell. So you use the wind. You didn't do it directly. You use the wind to accomplish the malacha. So the Gemara says, in fact, this would be grumma. In other areas of halacha, if the wind would come, with regards to Nezikin, the Gemara says, if the wind would come and cause a hezek, that would be grumma b'Nezikin. I didn't do the damage. The wind came and caused the damage to occur. So that would be grumma, but when it comes to Zaira, Veruach Mesayasa, so the Gemara says, then you're chayev for winnowing by using the wind. Why, says the Gemara? Because Meleches Machsheves Asra Taira. On Shabbos, what is prohibited is a thoughtful malacha, and generally speaking, Meleches Machsheves serves to create leniencies on Shabbos. The Pasuk says with regards to the Mishkan, Meleches Machsheves, it was a thoughtful malacha. So too, and we know the connection, of course, exists between the Mishkan and Shabbos. So too on Shabbos, it has to be a creative, thoughtful malacha that serves as the basis for the kula of Davar Sheino Miskaven and Malach Shein Tzricha Legufa and many other kulas on Shabbos. But here, the Gemara uses it lechumra that since you're using the wind to accomplish a malacha of winnowing, malachas machsheves asur Torah, thoughtful malacha is prohibited on Shabbos, and therefore, here as well, even though you're not doing it yourself, it would be grumma, or should have been grumma, here it is prohibited. So the question is, what is the pshat in this Gemara? Why is this different than the typical grumma on Shabbos, which is allowed, at least b'makom seda? And certainly not chayiv, achatas, achayiv skilo, if you do it b'mezin. Why is Zarev Aruch Masayos, if you use the wind to accomplish a malach, I'm not doing it directly, I'm causing it to occur, how come there you're chayiv? So as we'll see, there's really two approaches in the Rishonim as to how to understand this Gemara in Masechtas Bava Kamma, and then based on each one of their approaches, we'll have to distinguish the Gemara Bava Kamma from the Gemara in Masechtas Shabbos. So Rashi in that Gemara Bava Kamma explains, Malachas Machsheves Asur Torah, the Torah Asur, thoughtful, creative malachas, that over here, even though you're not doing the malacha b'yadayim, you're causing the malacha to occur, but niskaima machshavtoi, denechalei beruach misayasai. You have accomplished what you set out to accomplish, even though you didn't do it directly, you used the wind to accomplish it, which is in fact grumma. You caused it to occur, but ultimately you accomplished what you set out to accomplish, niskaima machshavtoi, and that's included in the pasuk of Meleches Machsheves, a thoughtful and creative malacha, and here you fulfilled what you thought, what you set out to accomplish. So therefore, Rashi understands, even if you do something in an indirect fashion, but if you accomplish what you set out to accomplish, that kind of grama is a chayiv midairaisa on Shabbos. Well, then what then is the difference? How come? That's how Rashi understood the Gemara Bava Kama, but then we're left with a problem. Why is that different than the Gemara Masechta Shabbos? Where the Gemara says if you put barrels full of water to prevent the spread of the fire, your intention is to prevent the spread of the fire and put barrels full of water so that it will put out the fire, so you accomplish what you set out to accomplish, to put out the fire. So why is that grama that is permitted if you set out, you accomplish what you set out to accomplish, it should have also been included in Melachas Machsheves Asur Torah. So here, within the Pshat of Rashi, Avnei Nezer and Reb Chaim Oizer both quote the opinion of the Shilta Giborim, which distinguishes between that Gemara and Shabbos and the Gemara and Masechtas Bava Kama. And he seems to be working within Rashi's kind of framework. The Shilta Giborim on that Gemara Masechtas Shabbos explains that really over there, your intention is not to put out the fire. Your intention is to prevent the spread of the fire. I don't want it to burn my property. So the Shilta Giborim writes, She'enim Echavim Lechavois. I don't intend to put out the fire. El Shul Oysa Shum Dover Lachzais Bifnei Adeleka. I want to prevent the spread of the fire. But my intention is not necessarily to put out the fire. If it would be somewhere else, I probably wouldn't be interested in putting out the fire. It's not my business. But here, it's coming to burn down my property, so I don't want it to spread there, so now I'm not so much interested in putting out the fire, but preventing the spread of the fire. So therefore, it says, explain the Achrayim, that here it's not really Niskayma Machshavto. It's not that I accomplished what I set out to accomplish, and what I wanted to accomplish was putting out the fire. What I wanted to accomplish was preventing the spread of the fire. So that kind of grama would be ogah, because your intention is not to put out the fire, your intention is just to prevent, is not the malach of kibbutz, it's just to prevent the spread of the fire to your property. Another possible distinction within the position of Rashi, between the Gemara and Masechta Shabbos, where you have the barrels of water to put out the fire, and the Gemara Bava Kama, where you're winnowing by using the wind, neither one are you doing it directly, but using the wind is prohibited midairaisa, as opposed to putting the barrels of water in front of the fire, that's only grama. So another possible distinction could be based on the opinion of the Ritva. The Gemara says in Masechta Shabbos and Daf Mem Zayinim Abayz, that if you have a candle on Shabbos, you're allowed to put a plate around the candle, in order so that the spark should fall into the plate and prevent a fire. But you're not allowed to put water at the base of a candle on Shabbos. You're not allowed to, you could do it Arab Shabbos, but you're not allowed to put on Shabbos water at the base of a candle. So when the candle will burn, after a certain amount, it will get put out by the water. You're not allowed to do that. Even though you're not putting out the fire directly, the Gemara says, you're just causing it to be put out. It's gram kiboy. Nonetheless, the Mishnah says, Masechta Shabbos, that you're not allowed to do it on Shabbos. So Gemara asks, but why? It's just gram kiboy. You're not actually putting out the fire, you're just causing it to be put out. When the fire will, and the candle will sink to the level of the water, be put out by the water, but you're not doing it directly. So why is it prohibited? So Taisus and that Gemara Masechta Shabbos has a very technical explanation. Taisus' explanation is that it's because you might make a mistake, you might be clumsy, and put out the fire as you're trying to put the water in the base of the candle, you might actually put out the fire directly. However, the Ritva explains that Gemara a little bit more fundamentally than Taisus, where he explains that there's a distinction within grama, that the only time grama is not a malacha midoraisa on Shabbos is when it's not a reasonable certainty that you'll perform a malacha in the process. But over here, you will almost certainly perform a malacha in the process. The candle is going to, when it reaches a certain height, it gets lower to a certain height, it will, with reasonable certainty, be put out by the water at the bottom of the tray. Of course, some unusual, extraordinary circumstance could happen that would prevent that from occurring, but, with reasonable certainty, you're going to bring about the performance of a malacha, of kibbutz. So there, grama is prohibited. Why? Presumably along the lines of Rashi, because niskayma machshavtoy. You set out to accomplish, you accomplish what you set out to accomplish. What is the Gemara in Shabbos on Kuf Chafim Abayz talking about, where you put the barrels in order to prevent the spread of the fire? There is not a reasonable even certainty that you're going to perform a malacha. It could be that the fire will change direction. Many times the fire changes direction based on the wind. So it could be the fire will blow will travel in a different direction, and your barrels will never accomplish the malacha of kibbutz. So perhaps the only time we can call it niskayma machshavtoy, that you accomplish what you set out to accomplish and grama would be prohibited, is if there's a reasonable certainty you're going to accomplish a malach in the process. But if there's no reason, like Zayir Beruach Masayasa, you're almost definitely going to accomplish a malacha. Or by putting water at the base of the candle, you almost definitely accomplish a malacha. And if that's what you set out to accomplish, that would be a malacha of kibui. And grama would be prohibited midairaisa. The only time the Gemara said grama shari, that it's mutter, that it's not a malacha dairaisa, and we mutter, but makam hefsid, is if it's not a certainty that you're going to perform a malacha in the process. But if it is a certainty, would not be allowed. Okay, so that's how Rashi understood the Gemara Bava Kama, that why is zayir v'ruach misayasa, why is a winnowing with the use of the wind, even though you're not doing it directly, you're just causing it to occur, why is that prohibited midairaisa? So Rashi says, because you set out to, you accomplish what you set out to accomplish. Malachas machsheves asur Torah niskayma machshavtoi. Why is that different than the Gemara in Masechet Shabbos and Kufchaf Amabez, where you're putting the barrels in the path of the fire? So it could be because over there your intention is not really to do kibbutz, your intention is just to prevent the spread of the fire, like the Shul de Yibarim, or it could be because over there it's not a reasonable certainty that you're going to perform a malacha. Maybe no malacha will occur in the end of the day. But this is all within Rashi's explanation of that Gemara in Bava Kama. The Rosh in Bava Kama, Perek Vav Simin Yud Aleph, has an entirely different explanation of that Gemara. The Rosh explains that the reason why you're chayev for winnowing, but through using the wind, even though you're not doing it directly, is because one of the lamites of its melachas and Shabbos is zayra. And really, the only way of doing winnowing is by using the wind. So the Rosh writes, "Bahachi chayev Torah came in the melachas zu ikar asiyos deyaruach." It must be the Torah obligated you. Even though you're not doing it directly, you're only doing it through the wind, must be the Torah obligated you, even though you're using the wind. Even though you're harnessing a force to do it, you're not doing it yourself, must be the Torah obligated you, because it's one of the Lamates Malachos, and there are Malachos which are Chayiv, even though you didn't do it directly, otherwise there's no other way you could be Chayiv for the Malacha. For example, it's not only Zayra, it would be true by other Malachos too. For example, Afia, baking, or cooking. A person doesn't bake or cook on their own, they can't cause it to cook or bake. What you can do, you can cause it, but you can't accomplish it on your own directly. What you do is you take the dough and you put it inside of the oven, and then you cause it to be in a position where it will be baked. Or planting. You cause the thing to grow, you put it in the dirt, and the dirt, causes it to grow. So you're just beginning the process, but really, you're not doing it directly, the baking, the cooking, or the planting, where it has to take root and to grow. You're just putting it in a position where it will occur. You harness the force in order to do it. And nonetheless, the Torah is mechayev you there. So even though it might have been grama here, where you harness the force to do it, you're chayev. Because these malachas, you can't violate them in any other way. So it must be, says the Rosh, that the Torah is mechayev you for doing it, even though really you're doing it indirectly. Other Rishonim take this idea of the Rosh and they expand it even further, that it's not only those malachas that you can't accomplish any other way other than through the means of another force, like the wind. I mean, you can't do it directly. You have to do it indirectly through the use of a secondary force. But it could be even malachas that you don't necessarily have to do in that way, but they're regularly done in that way, could be also chayv, even though you didn't do it directly. You only did it through the means of a secondary force. And they base their comment on the Gemara Bava Kama, where the Gemara tells us in Masechtas Bava Kama that if a person damages someone else with a fire, the Gemara quotes the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan and Daf Chav Beis Amud Aleph, that Isham Isham Chitzav, if I damage someone else with a fire, meaning I send the fire into his property, and the fire goes and burns down his house. So the Gemara says, that's not Mamon Hamazik. That's not that I was negligent in my property, and my property damaged you. Like if I'm not careful to watch over my animal, and my animal damages your property, that's Mamon Hamazik. My property damaged you, and I'm liable. No, the Gemara says, the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan is, if I have a fire that goes out and damages your property, that's like I shot an arrow into your property. If I shot arrows into your property and damaged your property, that's not my arrow damaged you. I damaged you through the means of an arrow. Or if I shoot a gun at something and damages it, then I am, it's not that the gun damaged it, my property damaged, Mamon Hamazik. No, that's Adam Hamazik. That's a personal obligation that I have because I went out and I injured somebody or I caused damages. And the Gemara says there, implies, Tosfos notices in Masechta Sanhedrin, the Gemara seems to assume, directly, the Gemara seems to assume that this applies not only to damages and nezikin, it applies to reticha as well. If I kill somebody through an arrow, by shooting an arrow at them, or by shooting a gun, or by sending a fire, and it kills them, that's not that my property killed that person. It's as if I killed them and I would be liable as a murderer. so that you can be chayav for Ritzicha too. Even though I myself didn't do it directly, I harnessed the force to do it. Nonetheless, that's considered to be my action, my Maisa. And therefore, the Nemuka Yosef asks in that Gemara Maseches Bava Kamma the following question. The Nemuka Yosef brings this back to Hilchos Shabbos. And the Nemuka Yosef says, if that's the case, Heichi Sharina Nimchashecha Lahadikas Haneiros, how can we ever light candles Erev Shabbos, like light Shabbos Licht? Your lighting is going to continue to burn throughout Shabbos. And that's going to be your action of Havara that's going to continue on to Shabbos. So you're violating, it turns out that you're violating Havara, even though you lit the candle on Friday, since the continuation of the activity relates to you, isn't it as if you're lighting candles throughout Shabbos and you're in violation of the Malacha of Shabbos, of kindling, of Havara. So the Muka Yosef explains that you're not chayev, obviously, for lighting Shabbos licht before Shabbos, because even though the continuation, whatever happens afterwards, relates to you, you harness the force, you harness the fire to do what you wanted it to do, it all relates, it all comes back, it's all contained within the moment that you actually did the activity. When I light the fire, the continuation of the lighting of the candle relates to that moment in time when I lit the candle. But since you lit the candle on Friday, so you did it at a time when it was permissible to light the candle, so then you don't have a problem of violating Shabbos. And we don't consider it as if every single second you're lighting a new candle. It all relates to the moment when you did the activity of lighting the candle in the first place. Well, let's say, for example, a person shoots an arrow. It's not that he's continually shooting the arrow. Whatever happens as a result of him shooting the arrow already was contained in his action when he shot it in the first place. But if he lit the candle on Friday, so he did it at a time that was permitted, so the continuation would not turn out to be a violation of the Malacha of Shabbos. So you see from here that Nemuka Yosef is expanding this concept of Isha Mishum Chitzav. If I harness a force to do my bidding, to do what I wanted to do, then that all is considered to be my activity. It's considered to be my action, and would be, in theory, a violation of a Malacha on Shabbos. And this seems to be the opinion of the Ramban. The Ramban in Shabbos and Daf Kufnu and Gimel and Beis asked the following question. He asked, what is the typical way you go about plowing? One of the second of the Lamentes Malachas on Shabbos is Chayresh, is plowing. Of course, you could plow biyad, you could plow with your own hands, you take a trowel or a trough and plow. But perhaps the more typical way of plowing is by harnessing an animal and making the animal plow. So ask the Ramban, how is that one of the Lamentes of his Malachas that I'm Chayav for plowing? Who did the Malacha? Not me. The animal. If I encourage an animal to do a Malacha on Shabbos, for example, let's say I'm in a place where there's no Eruv. So if I strap a key, and I need to get my key home, so I can strap the key to my dog, and have the dog carry the key home. So I'm not carrying the key. Who's carrying the key? The dog. So you're not in violation of Haitzah. You can't do it. You're not in violation of Haitzah, but you're in violation of something else, of a lav of Mechamer. Whenever you encourage an animal to do any one of the Lamentes Malachos, I didn't do it, but I encourage an animal to do it, or instructed the animal to do it, so then I'm not in violation of Haitzah myself. I didn't carry. I caused it to be carried, but I didn't carry. The animal carried it. But that's not a Lamentes Ovis Malachos. I'm not Chayiv Midairaisa for Haitzah. I'm Chayiv, Chayiv Achatas or Skila for Haitzah, but you're Chayiv in Eloisa, say of Mechamer. I'm encouraging an animal to do a Malacha. So I asked the Ramban, how then can I be Chayiv Skila and Chatos? How can I be chayev midai raisa as one of the lamentes malachas of chayresh when I use an animal to plow? It should have just been the lav of mechamer, the leisa say of encouraging a general principle of encouraging an animal to do any malacha of carrying in rishus harabim or of plowing. How could I violate chayresh, one of the lamentes malachas that I'm violating, if the animal is the one that's doing the plowing? So the Ramban says the following. He writes shebipnei shachayresh bebehema. Who nice in aleha oil? I'm putting on top of it the harness. Vuhu kaive shoso tachas yado. I'm putting it underneath my hand. Vushusa hi oimet. This is under my control. Kala malacha al ha'odam hi. So then the whole malacha relates to me. Uvo hi toli. It depends on me. The ain ha behema el kakli biyado uman. The behema is just like an instrument, like a bow and arrow. In my hand, it's not an independent entity. So too, it could be, we see from the Ramban, not only by those malachas that have to be accomplished in this way, there's no other way to bake other than by using a natural force to do it, by causing it to occur by using a natural force, even those malachas that could be done in a different way, but perhaps are typically done by using another force, I'm also chayiv. If I harness a force to do my malacha, then it relates to me, it's considered to be my activity, and I'm chayiv on Shabbos. And it's not only those malachas that have to be done in that way, even malacha that could be done a different way, but it's typically done in this way, perhaps you also chayiv on Shabbos. There is a further machlokes between the Magen Avraham and almost everybody else about what about a malacha that's not even typically done in that fashion. Just I choose to do any malacha by harnessing a force, and that accomplishes the malacha. I didn't do it directly. It happens indirectly by me gathering or harnessing a force to do it. But it's not that it has to be done in this way. It's not even that it's typically done in this way. Another malacha, one of the Lama Tassavah's malachas, I only accomplish by harnessing a force to do it. What is the case of discussing a case where you have a water mill that's grinding kernels of grain into flour? So it's malacha of teichin, of grinding. So I'm not going to grind the kernel of grain directly. What the Paiskim are discussing is, can you put a kernel of grain further down on the conveyor belt? The water will run the mill, the conveyor belt will come close, and ultimately the grain will get ground on Shabbos. So if I put the kernel of grain on the conveyor belt on Shabbos, is that grama? Or is that teichin midairaisa? Am I just causing it to be ground, or am I actually grinding it myself? So the Magen Avraham writes, it's quoted by the Bir Halacha in Simuration Bei Sivhei, I'm a Magen Avraham Shemitzadeh Loimar, the Nesina Schita Mosech Rechaim Shomayim, if I put a kernel of grain on the conveyor belt of a water mill, Lekha Chiyav Chatos, the Hatchina Achakach Memegla Asi. I'm not Chayav Midairaisa, it would be Grumma, I caused it to occur, but I'm not Chayav Midairaisa, it's not my activity, because I didn't grind it myself, I caused it to happen. And Trina is not typically done in this fashion. But V'chol ha'achrayinim, says the Bi'ar Lacha, Daku Rayasai. Everybody else was Daichel arrived the Magen Avraham. V'eskimu ha'achrayinim. The Achrayinim have concluded, Hainu, who is that? El Yerabo, Evan Ha'ezer, Adagam Ervava, Chemed Maisha, the classical Achrayinim, disagree with the Magen Avraham. D'chayiv apta osim imeil, even though it happens by itself, because you harness the force to do it. V'chayin kisha'efe betano ha'afshafiyah, imeil ha'asigu besayt mikomako mikri maisa mamish. Just like when you bake in an oven, that's considered your activity, even though you just caused it to occur because you harness the force to do it. So too by Trina, even though Trina doesn't have to be performed in this fashion, it might not even be typically performed in this fashion. But if you harness a force to do it, you're chayiv. It's considered to be your activity on Shabbos. Why does the Magen Avraham disagree? So the Chassam Sofer and his Hagos and Shulchan Aruch explains, because Magen Avraham feels this malach is not typically done in this fashion, like Bishol or like Zereah. But the right of the Achrayim, almost everyone else except the Magen Avraham, disagree, and they say anytime you harness a force to do your malacha, that's considered to be your activity, and be chayv midoraisa for it on Shabbos. So getting back, that's the pshat of the Rosh in the Gemara Masechta Shabbos by Zayra Veruach Mesayasa. If I harness the wind to do my bidding, to winnow, to separate between the chaff of the kernel of grain and the kernel itself, so then even though I didn't do it directly, it should have been grama, but I harnessed the force to do it, you're chayv midoraisa on Shabbos, that all relates to you. That's considered to be your activity. But then we're left with the problem. What then is the difference between this and the Gemara we began with, of putting the barrels of water in the path of the fire in order to extinguish the fire? There also, you're setting up a system by which kiboy, extinguishing the fire, is going to occur. Why isn't that included in this principle as well? So Chaim Eizer has a landmark tshuva about electricity, and others have the same, quote the same tshuva from the Zera Emes, from the 1700s, where the Zera Emes makes a distinction that many others accept as well. And the distinction of the Zera Emes between the Gemara Masechtas Bava Kamma and the Gemara Masechtas Shabbos, the old kasha that we've been dealing with, is that there's a difference between when the force that you harness takes over right away to complete your action, then you're chayiv midaraisa. Between when the force does not take over right away, there's a time delay, and does not come to complete your action, then that's grama on Shabbos. If the force continues, let's say by zera, I throw it up into the wind, immediately the wind comes and separates between the chaff and the kernel of grain, that's a malacha daraisa on Shabbos of zera. But by placing, let's say, the barrels of water in the path of the fire, I place the barrels of water over here, the fire is starting somewhere else, so the fire doesn't pick up the kayach acher, the other force doesn't pick up my activity to complete it, of extinguishing. I didn't extinguish at all. I put barrels of water over here. And the other fire is acting over here. So it's not that the force is acting on my, you know, continuing my action to complete what I said, you know, what I began, the activity that I began. They're two separate things. That's grama on Shabbos. And that's mutter midaraisa, and only it would be permitted, b'makom hefsed. That's grama. What is your malachas if the force takes over right away and completes the activity that you begin? The distinction of the Zera Emes seems to be predicated upon a Gemara Masechta Sanhedrin. The Gemara tells us the Masechta Sanhedrin that finds Zion, that if I tie up a person, Omar Rava, Kafsei Bechama Umeis, I tie up a person in the heat and he dies. Or I tie him up in the cold, the bitter cold, and he dies. So then Chayav, you're a right Seach. You didn't kill them directly, but you harness the force to kill them. So that's considered to be your activity in Kol HaTorah Kula. Not only in Ezekiel and damages and Shabbos, also in Ritzichon. So it's considered to be your activity and your Chayav as a right Seach. But let's say I tie a person up, let's say in the desert, it's very hot during the day, but it's cold at night. So I tie him up in the desert at night, and then the sun will rise during the day, and he'll die in the heat. So Saif Chama Lavai, Saif Tzina Lavai. The sun is not here now, the cold is not here now, but it will arrive later and kill them. So then the Gemara says, that's a grama. You caused the person to die, but you didn't kill him directly in your putter. Of course, you're not a right Seach. Of course, it's usher, but you're not a right Seach. It would be putter. Why? Because you didn't kill the person directly. You caused the person to die. You're not a right Seach biyadayim. Why? But the same force is coming. Yes, but the answer is the force doesn't come directly at the conclusion of your action to complete what you began. The force comes later on. So it's something else from your activity. So it's only that's grama. The only time it's considered to be your action is when the force takes over what you began and completes your activity. That's a malacha d'oraisa on Shabbos. You'd be a reitzeach, be other mamazik. But if the force your activity is over here, you place the kelim full of water over here, and the fire is over here somewhere else, it's not that the fire is continuing your activity of extinguishing, so you didn't harness the fire, you didn't harness the force in order to do extinguishing, the two things are separate, or if there's a time delay in between, so then that would not be considered between the force acting and your activity, so then that would not be considered to be a hemshech, a continuation of your action, and the action would not relate to you, that would be grama. On Shabbos. This is the basis of the discussion in the Paiskim with regards to manipulating Shabbos clocks on Shabbos. If a person sets up, let's say, Shabbos clock before Shabbos to turn on a light on Shabbos, so let's say, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and he wants to manipulate it on Shabbos that it should turn on, let's say he wants it to turn on later. He wants to preserve the status quo. So Rav Moshe and Rav Shlomo Zalman's opinion is that a person is always allowed to preserve status quo. If it's supposed to turn on at 2 o'clock, right now it's off. It's supposed to turn on at 2 o'clock, and I want to change it to turn on at 4 o'clock. That is permitted because you didn't do anything on Shabbos. The first rule of Malacha Shabbos is you have to accomplish something discernible. Here you just preserve status quo. Preserving status quo on Shabbos is always allowed. It's a larger discussion. It relates to Shabbos elevators and other things too, but beyond the scope of our conversation right now. But preserving status quo on Shabbos is allowed. Of course, you can't take the peg out from the 2 o'clock slot and then put it back into the 4 o'clock slot. That's not, because once you took it out, the status quo is that it's never going to turn on. So now you put it back into the 4 o'clock slot, now you change the status quo. But if you can manipulate it in such a way that you never take out the 2 o'clock peg and you just turn it to 4 o'clock, so maintaining status quo was never usher on Shabbos. But let's say I wanted to make it, I want to manipulate it to turn on earlier. Or I want to manipulate it to turn off earlier. So is that allowed on Shabbos or not? So Meisher's opinion was, and the Gris Meisher, Rav Shlomo Zalman has this in the Mincha Shlema as well, that no, that could be a Malacha D'oraisa. Rav Shlomo Zalman writes in Chelek Aleph Simin Yud Gimel, that when you put the peg in to the dial of the Shabbos clock to make it turn off earlier, so then you're kind of setting up, you harness the force to do a malacha of kibuy, or to do a malacha of havara, of kindling, by turning on the fire, by turning on the, if it's an incandescent bulb, so you're turning on a bulb. If it's a fluorescent LED lights, then it's more to discuss. It might not be a malacha d'oraisa, but if so, if there's an incandescent bulb with a filament, so you're doing a malacha d'oraisa of kindling. Because you're setting up a system, you're harnessing a force which acts right away, immediately at the conclusion of your activity, to complete what you began. So you're putting in a peg, and that ultimately, continues around and around and around until it hits the switch, boom, and it turns on the light. So that's a continuation of your activity, and could potentially be a malacha d'oraisa on Shabbos. I presume that Rav Shlomo Zalman would distinguish between this and a thermostat. If I switch a thermostat, And that makes either the air conditioning turn on or the heat turn on earlier. Of course, to preserve status quo, to make it turn on later would be allowed. If you have an electric thermostat, we're not talking about that. Then you have a problem with electricity. The old-time thermostats, which is just a dial. So if you want to maintain status quo, to turn on later, that would be allowed. But let's say you want to manipulate it to turn on earlier at a lower temperature. So then that's not the kayach acher taking over after your activity to complete what you, the force, you didn't harness a force to do what you set out to accomplish. That's like putting, kadeh mayim, barrels full of water in the path of the fire. The fire is over here and the barrels of water are over here. So I think a thermostat would be different from Shlomo Zalman, or should be different, than manipulating the Shabbos clock. Okay, so that's the main discussion with regards to the distinction between grama and a malacha d'oraisa. On Shabbos, Rashi's opinion is whenever niskayma machshavta, you accomplish what you set out to accomplish, grama is always not allowed. And the Ritva said that's only if it's going to happen with a reasonable certainty. And then what you're trying to do is the malacha, then grama is not permitted at all. It'd be a malacha d'oraisa. And if it's not niskayma machshavta, you just performed in malacha, you caused it to occur, but you didn't do it directly, it would only be mutter b'makom hefsid, and if you don't have niskayma machshavta. And the opinion of the Rosh is that if you cause a malacha to occur without harnessing a natural force that takes over right away after your activity, so then that would be mutter b'makom hefsid. But if you harness a force to do a malacha that takes over at the conclusion of your activity, to complete the malacha, that would be a ma'isa adam, would be a malacha d'oraisa on Shabbos. So even grama, though, even if you will come up with a switch that will get around Rashi and the Rosh's pshat, still will only be mutter b'makom hefsid. Again, Sfardim, within the opinion of the Shulchan Aruch, is somewhat negotiable. What was the opinion of the Shulchan Aruch? Was it only mutter b'makom hefsid? But again, many Paiskim assume even the Shulchan Aruch would only allow grama b'malacha b'makom hefsid. However, about 35, 40 years ago, Rabbi Halperin developed a switch or technology which he was trying to argue should be permitted, wouldn't even be grama, wouldn't even reach the threshold of doing malacha, causing malacha to occur. It's not even causing malacha. It's mamish mutter on Shabbos. Because even grama is only mutter b'makom hefsid. The Shulchan Aruch quotes from Shlomo Zalman in Perek Gimel, how Aron and Ches, even grama is not only mutter b'makom hefsid, once in a while. It's not a policy. Even if it's b'makom hefsid on a regular basis, the opinion of Shlomo Zalman was ki hetesh grama hu rak al derech mikre. You can't set up a system, even though it's b'makom hefsid, you can't set up a system where you're constantly doing grama. That was a kula. So, okay, but even grama is only mutter b'makom hefsid, and even b'makom hefsid, Shlomo Zalman felt that that's not something that should be done regularly. But Rabbi Halperin tried to develop technology that wouldn't even reach the threshold of grama. And what he was basing himself, based his technology upon was a sif in Shulchan Aruch, and Simireisha in Zayin Sif Beis, which Shulchan Aruch discusses the case of a candle that's near a door, an open door. So of course we know in order for a candle to burn, it needs fuel. Of course you need a spark, but it needs fuel and it needs oxygen in order to burn. So the more oxygen you have, as long as it's not blowing out the candle, causes the candle to burn better. The more oxygen you have, and the less oxygen you have, the less the candle burns. Will not burn as well. So let's say you have an open door adjacent to a candle. So the candle is burning very well because there's a lot of oxygen that's coming in through the door. And a person closes the door. So now he's causing the candle to be extinguished to a certain degree. It's not going to blow out entirely, but there'll be less oxygen. So it will be extinguished minimally, somewhat. So that would be a malacha of kiboy on Shabbos. So is that allowed? Are you allowed to close the door and you're going to cause the fire to be diminished slightly? So Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah both say yes. It's mutter, not that it's grama b'makom hefsid. It's hetter gomer to close the door, and it's not that it's a secondary intention. It's not a dover shein miskaven. Your intention is to close the door. That's what it sounds like from the Shulchan Aruch. Your intention is to close the door in order to minimize the fire slightly, the candle, and nonetheless, it's permitted. It's not that it's a dover shein miskaven and things like that. No, that's what you're intending to do. Why is it permitted? Why should that be allowed? So Behalpin explained that it's because you're not really putting out the fire directly. What you're doing is removing an obstacle. You're removing the oxygen, and that is causing the fire to go out. Let's say there's a fire that's traveling down. There's a fire that's traveling, and there's wood in the path of the fire. I'm not putting barrels of water. There's wood in the path of the fire, so that's potential fuel for the fire. And I come and I remove the wood from the path of the fire. So of course that's permitted on Shabbos. I'm not causing the fire to be extinguished. I'm just removing potential fuel from the path of the fire. So over here, I'm removing oxygen, which is in this sense helps the fire burn, removing potential oxygen from the path of the candle. But I'm not extinguishing the candle directly. I'm removing what Rabbi Halpern called menias ha-menia. I'm removing an obstacle to extinguishing. I'm not extinguishing it directly. I'm removing something which would have allowed the fire to burn perhaps better later on. And I'm removing it over here, like removing fuel from the path of the fire. So just like that's allowed, you're allowed to close the door, even though that's going to prevent later on the flow of oxygen to the candle. But equal, that's removing an obstacle, not doing something directly. So based on that sif and Shulchan Aruch, that's heter gomer, that's not even gromer, that's not causing malacha to occur, that's removing an obstacle, and the malacha happens on its own. The candle diminishes on its own, and I'm just removing an obstacle to moving potential fuel from the fire that it would have gotten later on. So based on this, it may happen in the Varuk technology that you have he developed a switch where you have pulses of light that go from one receptor to another receptor, and that causes the appliance to turn on. But he put in between a plastic piece, something that's blocking the pulses of light from going from the one receptor to the other one, and that prevents the appliance from turning on. And what his switch did was that it removed the piece of plastic from in between the pulses of light, and then the appliance turned on its own. So he compared that to that sif in Shulchan Aruch of closing the door by the candle. That you're not putting out the candle, you're just removing potential fire from the candle, potential fuel, and the candle gets diminished all by itself. So over here, you're removing an obstacle, and the appliance turns on its own. That's the way the appliance, it doesn't turn on because of any activity that I did. It's not even grandma. It turns on all its own, and I removed an obstacle from its path. So he passed this around, this idea of this technology that perhaps it should be mutter on Shabbos to run appliances in this fashion. And the Paiskim universally, almost, did not accept this as to become standard practice. Some, Rabbi Moshe and Rabbi Yashiv, quoted by the Sefer Shvus Yitzchak, their opinion was that it's Malacha Deiraisa. It's Malacha Deiraisa on Shabbos. Others had other oppositions to it, and more, their main opposition to it was because the appliance turns on right away. Even though you didn't turn on the appliance, you just removed an obstacle, and the appliance turns on its own because of the pulses of light that are flowing, and it was always supposed to turn on, it just didn't because of the piece of plastic was in its way. So even though, yes, that's the how you went about it, that's the mechanism, but since it happens right away, whatever happens right away is attributed to me, is it considered to be my action. For example, the Gemara says in Masechta Sanhedrin, Hazorik Chetz, on the Fine Zanim Abay, the person who shoots an arrow at someone else who's holding a shield. Okay, I don't know, he's shooting an arrow at someone who's holding a shield. No problem. The third party comes and removes the shield. And now the arrow hits the person who was holding the shield and it kills him. So is the person who removes the shield a Reitzeach or not? So the Gemara says, no, he's not a Reitzeach. He was just Hasaras Hamainea. He removed the shield. I didn't shoot the arrow, the other guy shot the arrow. So the guy who removes the shield is not a Reitzeach. He perhaps caused the other guy to be killed, but he's not a Reitzeach. He's a Grumma, but he's not a Reitzeach. That he could be Chayv Misa. But the Yad Ramah writes on that Gemara that's only true if the arrow is somewhat of a distance away from the shield. But if the arrow is sitting on the shield, the minute you remove the shield, boom, the arrow hits him, so then you are a Reitzeach, because it happened right away, even though it only happened by Hasara Samanei, removing an obstacle. But if it happens right away, that's considered to be your action. Reb Chaim Eizer, Nachiezer, quotes this Yad Ramah in disagreeing with Reb Tzvi Pesach Frank. Reb Tzvi Pesach Frank's opinion initially was, at the beginning, when electricity was still being dealt with for the first times, so his opinion was that turning on a light was permitted on Yom Tov, because he understood that the circuit is closed by itself, and the switch is just a blockage in the circuit. And when you flip the switch, you're not turning on the light directly, you're removing an obstacle, and the light turns on all by itself. You're just removing an obstacle, but you're not connecting the circuit. You're not connecting the circuit directly. You're removing an obstacle to the circuit, and then the flow of electricity happens all by itself. So it was Groma, and Groma's Mutter on Yom Tov, so he held that perhaps you're just causing it to occur, and should be mutter on Yom Tov. And Reb Chaim Eizer disagreed, and he said, first of all, you have the technology wrong. That's not the way switches work. When you close the switch, you actually create the circuit. So he said, but even if your technology would be correct, you would have the proper assessment of it. It's still, since it happens immediately, even though it's just Hasaras HaMeinea, you're just removing the shield, you're just removing a blockage, whatever happens immediately is attributed to you. is considered to be your action, and you could be chayv midoraisa for turning on the candle, turning on the light, the incandescent bulb on Yontif. It's not a grama, it's your maisa. So Sotu over here, the initial switch that was developed, that happened right away. So even though, yes, it happened through a menias hamaniya, removing an obstacle, the many paisim were opposed to it, of course, because it happens, the results are immediately. So with the new, the kosher switch technology, what they added to it, to the technology of Rabbi Halperin from 35, 40 years ago, was a time delay, a random time delay, that you remove a plastic switch in between the pulses of light, and that causes the appliance to turn on all by itself, the light turns on by itself. All I did is remove an obstacle that was blocking the pulses of light, and now they introduced that it doesn't happen right away, but it happens with the time delay. It happens with the time delay. And it's a random time delay. You never know how long it's going to take. So there. So the question is, does that change what the reaction of the Paiskim would have been to the technology of Rabbi Halperin? So the truth of the matter is, many Paiskim were opposed. I don't believe it changes it, because the reaction of the Paiskim, because many the Paiskim were opposed to Rabbi Halperin's technology, not only because it occurs right away, but also because it's fundamentally different than the case of the candle and the door, where you're just removing an obstacle, and the and this switch, the grama switch, or the kosher switch, are two entirely different cases. They're not comparable cases at all. Why? Because over here, by the door, the door, which is allowing the oxygen in, and the candle are two separate entities. So yes, you can view closing the door as preventing additional fuel from reaching the candle, and that's just hasara samanea, like removing the wood from in the path of the fire, and that would be mutter on Shabbos. But here, where the whole thing is one apparatus, one mechanism, even though inside, yes, it might be hasara samanea, it might be minia samanea, removing an obstacle, but it's one apparatus. So Rabbi Yashvin and others argued that the Ramayisha, those who were around the time of the technology of Rabbi Halperin, argued that no, that since it's all one apparatus, we can't view them as two separate things. We view it as one thing. Rav Asher Weitz in his Sefer HaChumash and Parshas Vayakha also disagrees with the initial suggestion of the grama switches, not only because there's no time delay, but also because it's one apparatus. We view it all as one thing. Rav Asher Weitz links it, I thought of this on my own, but I was, Baruch Hashem, I saw it there, he has it as well, that this might be part of the larger discussion in Halacha, that many times we go based on the way things are perceived, not the way which is the most scientifically correct. This has to do with whether or not lice reproduce, and whether or not you got to kill lice on Shabbos. Even though we know they reproduce, the Gemara seems to assume that you're allowed to kill them on Shabbos because they don't reproduce. So yes, even though it might be on a microscopic level, or even if it is not a microscopic level, but we perceive it that it doesn't reproduce, so then the halacha goes based on the way that it's perceived. It's relevant with regards to the bugs in the fish and other similar cases. Psigratia and Shabbos many times is determined not based on science. We don't have to do a study. It's the way people think. Is the malacha necessarily going to occur? Is it not going to occur? Is whether or not determines it's a psigratia. You don't have to do a scientific study. It's the way things are perceived, as opposed to what is the most perhaps scientifically correct. And so too over here, the way it is perceived is, when you flip the switch, the light turns on as a result of you flipping the switch. Yes, inside the mechanics might be one thing or another, might be hasara samanea, but the way it is perceived, and the way it is marketed even, is when you turn the switch, that's what turns on the light. And that was the opposition that the Paiskim had as well to the technology of Rabbi Halperin. I think that that opposition as well would exist with regards to the kosher switch. And I think that all the Paiskim, no one allowed the technology of Rabbi Halperin Lemaisa, even Rabbi Shlomo Zalman and Rabbi Avadia, who weren't sure, maybe it's Gerama, maybe it's Maisa Adam, Rabbi Maitre, Rabbi Yashiv held that it was Maisa Adam and Chayv Midoraisa. Rabbi Shlomo Zalman and Rabbi Yashiv and Rabbi Avadia's opinion was that maybe it's grama, and therefore they said we should institute it. They only allowed it in the hospitals or in places which are involved in security, because either way they have a hetzer to violate Shabbos for pikuach nefesh. So he said, why not put in these grama switches? Maybe that lowers the prohibition to a grama, which is lowers the degree of what they're doing, but not that it should be mutter. gratuitously for people to install these things in their home, then no one ever allowed that. And even if there is a time delay just makes things grumma. Even if there is a time delay, all that does is make it into a grumma, which again would only be mutter, b'makom hefsid. One could even argue here that you're harnessing a force to do a malacha, even though it happens at random intervals. You said in course of motion, which created the malacha. So I think the paiskim, all the paiskim who oppose the grammar switch would oppose the kosher switch as well. Just one final comment is that many, when the kosher switch initially came out in 2011, there were certain haskamas that they reported that they had from Gedolei HaPaiskim, from Avnoivert, from Nevinsel, from Sternbach, from Rebelski, and in 2011 already it came out that either there was misrepresentations, miscommunications, misunderstanding, and all four of those paiskim, none of them intended to give a haskama to this to be installed in people's home. Maybe they understood it was only in hospitals, where either way you're violating Shabbos, or maybe they didn't agree to it at all under any circumstance. But they all they later came out, did not give their haskama to the kosher switch to be used, certainly in people's homes. Even the rabbanim who are currently, give their, it was reported by the kosher switch that they give their haskama to it in recent days, some of them have retreated from their initial positions, and things are still evolving. It's also not surprising that some of the paiskim some of the rabbanim who they have haskama from Sfaradim, which again are more open to the grama and Shabbos being mutter even shaloi b'makom hefsed. But certainly for Ashkenazim, it should be there's more of a reason to be machmir. One final note is, and again, I never play. I'm very not want to do this, but to play the gadol game of who is greater than who. And I don't mean to belittle anyone, chas v'shalom, any rav, any paisik at all. But the names that are listed on the website of giving their haskama, while those who have not retracted, some are, they are respected rabbanim, but they are not from the gedolei hapoiskim of our time who were aware of this technology. The Rabbi Yashiv, Rabbi Avadia, Rabbi Vosner, all who passed away recently were alive when this technology was being passed around and was being developed. And even the gedolei hapoiskim currently, who we are accustomed to hearing about, In all areas of halacha and Hilchos Shabbos and other areas of halacha, who everyone universally recognizes as Gedolei HaPaiskim of our time, are not from those people who have given their haskama. So even though certain people might be respected rabbanim who have, it's certainly not from the Gedolei HaPaiskim. And in order to change the way Shabbos is practiced fundamentally in our time, which the kosher switch would do, you need the haskama, universal haskama of the Gedolei HaPaiskim of our time. We had in last week's parasha, Parasha Shmini. They had the parasha begins by Hiba Yom Hashmini, the dedication of the Mishkan. Kara Moshe LaAaron ulevanav ulekol ziknei Yisrael. Moshe Rabbeinu summons Aaron and his children and all of the elders of Klal Yisrael. And Rashi already asks, why does he summon the elders of Klal Yisrael? The Aaron and his children have to be there because they're going to initiate the avodah in the Mishkan. Why do the ziknei Yisrael have to be there? So the Be'er Yosef explains, because there are two innovations in last week's parasha. Two new things that people did. Nadav and Aviu tried to innovate in the Avod in the Mishkan, and that was an Eish Zara, Shelo Tziv Hashem, and they were killed. They innovated and was not accepted. But yet the Mishkan is also an innovation. That's also initiated in this week's Parsha, and in Parsha Shmini. That's an innovation which is accepted. What's the difference between an innovation that is accepted? How come the Mishkan is accepted and Nadav and Aviu's innovation was not accepted? And the Be'er Yosef, Rabbi Yosef Salant, explains that it's because the Mishkan was done with the guidance and with the approval of the Ziknei Yisrael, of the Gedolei Yisrael. And when it's done under the guidance and the advice of Gedolei Yisrael, that's an innovation which can be accepted, like the Mishkan. But when it's not done, Nadav and Aviu did not consult with the Gedolei Yisrael. It's one pshat in the Medrash, quoted by Rashi. They were higher halacha b'fnei Rabban. They did not consult with the Moshe, and it was not done with the guidance of Gedolei Yisrael. Then such an innovation cannot be accepted. And so too, to make such an innovation that we are discussing here, which would change the way Shabbos is practiced, needs to be the universal, not one Rav here, there. In a communal rav. It needs to be from the haskama of who we all recognize in our times, the Gedolei Yisrael, in order to make such an innovation.